This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Matthew and Dominique Lyle? Just a reminder, I'm not diagnosing anybody in this video, only speculating about what could be happening in a situation like this. If you enjoyed this video, please like it, subscribe to my channel, and consider supporting me on Patreon. I will put the link to Patreon in the description for this video. First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Matthew and Dominique Lyle met online in 1996 and became romantically involved. They had both been born in 1967. Matthew went by the name Matt, and Dominique went by the name Nikki. Matt had been married and divorced. Nikki had been married and divorced twice. She had a daughter named Alex from a prior marriage. Early in the relationship between Matt and Nikki, they moved to Oklahoma for Nikki's job. She worked a lot of hours and was the breadwinner for the family. Matt did not have a job. He stayed at home and looked after Alex. Matt and Nikki married on February 14, 1998. This same year, they moved to Mississippi so that Nikki could take a different job. This position was in corporate finance. In September of 1998, the couple had a daughter named Amanda. Matt and Nikki argued frequently. Matt suspected that Nikki was having an affair. Over time, he became increasingly jealous and controlling. In 1999, the family moved to Lawrenceville, Georgia, because Nikki was transferred with her current employer to a location in Atlanta. In 2001, the couple had a daughter named Rebecca. In Georgia, Nikki was still the breadwinner, but Matt did work when they lived there. He ran a small computer business out of the family house. He would purchase old computer equipment, repair it, and sell it. After some bicycles were stolen from outside the house, Matt installed a security camera. For some reason, he continued installing cameras. Eventually, he had 20 cameras outside the house and one camera inside the house. He had created an ultra-boring version of The Truman Show. During this time, Matt and Nikki started arguing frequently. The verbal altercations became so intense and disruptive, Nikki's daughter, Alex, moved out at the age of 16. The couple went to counseling, and the relationship appeared to improve for a while, but they soon returned to their old habits. Their arguments were loud, explosive, and frequent. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. In late June 2011, Nikki told friends that she was leaving Matt, but was frightened because he had threatened her in the past. On June 28, Nikki called 911 and said that her husband would not let her leave the house. When the police arrived, they offered to help Nikki leave, but she refused this offer. Later, she left on her own and went to work. Nikki only returned home after Matt had their daughter Amanda call her. On Friday, July 8, 2011, Matt and Nikki went out to dinner and a movie as part of an effort to repair their relationship. As usual, they ended up having a verbal altercation. The couple returned home during the early morning hours of Saturday, July 9. 2 days later, On Monday, July 11, 2011, Matt Lively reported his wife Nikki Lively missing. He had not seen her since July 9. Here is the story that Matt Lively supplied to the authorities. Late on July 8 and early on July 9, he and Nikki argued because he wanted sex and Nikki did not. Sometime around 2 or 3 a.m., Matt went to a first-floor bedroom to sleep as Nikki remained upstairs. At about 6 a.m., Matt woke up to use the bathroom and realized that his wife was no longer in the bedroom. Her purse, cell phone, and vehicle were still there. It was at this point that Matt realized the security cameras had been disabled. He said that Nikki did this when she left the house angry in order to aggravate him. Matt left the house and looked for Nikki for over an hour, but was not successful. Later, he contacted one of his wife's coworkers and asked if Nikki was with her. The coworker did not have a close relationship with Nikki, therefore, she was surprised that Matt called her. As the police continued to investigate, a search effort was initiated. Matt did not help with the search. On Wednesday, July 13, Matt filed for divorce. 2 days later, he supplied the police with Nikki's cell phones. She had two of them. One was severely damaged and could not be analyzed. On the next day, Saturday, July 16, Nikki's body was found in a wooded area at the front of the neighborhood where she lived. This was less than a mile from her house. She was face down under a mound of dirt and leaves and not wearing any clothing. Due to decomposition, the medical examiner was unable to determine how she died. She had no obvious injuries. Nikki had the drug GHB in her system. Semen matching Matt was found in her body. This proved that she had sex with him within a few days before her murder. Her death was classified as highly suspicious of homicidal violence. A few hours after the discovery of Nikki's body, the police searched the Lively family house. They seized electronic devices, including computers and hard drives. Considering how Matt had 21 security cameras, there should have been a lot of useful information about Nikki's movements. However, when the devices were examined, the police didn't find anything useful. Investigators believe that Matt was involved in his wife's death, but there wasn't enough evidence to determine what happened to Nikki. The case went cold. On February 13, 2012, a day before what would have been his 14th wedding anniversary, Matt and his daughters moved to Londonderry, Vermont. In July 2012, a cold case investigator revisited Nikki's murder. During the initial investigation, audio recordings had been identified by the police, but they really didn't listen to them. This time, they paid more attention. They realized the recordings had captured arguments between Matt and Nikki. In some of the recordings, there appeared to be a physical component. For example, Nikki told Matt to get off of her and accused him of putting his hands around her throat. The electronics that had been seized from the Lively residence were examined again. On July 9, 2011, the day Nikki disappeared, she could be seen just after midnight smoking a cigarette on the porch outside. After this, the security cameras continued functioning, but all the recordings up to 6:57 a.m. had been deleted. The cameras were manually deactivated at 7:18 a.m. through the use of a password. They were reactivated on July 11 at 4:41 a.m. The recordings from just after midnight to just before 7 a.m. on July 9 had been rendered irretrievable by using a program that was run on both July 11, the day Nikki was reported missing, and on July 16, the day that Nikki's body was found. It appeared as though someone was desperate to conceal what occurred during the early morning hours of July 9. On March 5, 2015, Matt Lively was arrested. He was later charged with murder and a few other offenses. His trial started on January 27, 2016. The state argued that Matt was lazy, manipulative, and demanding. He gave his wife GHB in order to obtain sex. He strangled her or sat on top of her to kill her. Matt's defense argued that Nikki was the one who caused the trouble in the marriage and that Matt never deleted the video recordings. Rather, Nikki shut off the system, just as Matt had claimed. On February 5, 2016, Matt was found guilty of malice murder, aggravated assault, and 3 counts of eavesdropping. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hello. This is Gary Chahot welcoming you to check out the French History Podcast. Our main show covers the history of France from the first humans until present. If you liked Mike Duncan's The History of Rome and wanted a similar program covering the land of beauty, culture, and love, we are exactly that. We also host world-renowned scholars who have delivered guest episodes on their specialties, including 18th century pirates, revolutionary booksellers in 20th century Paris, the special friendship between the Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson, and numerous others. Learn what you love and listen to the French History Podcast today.
Now moving to my analysis. Matt Lively maintains his innocence. He has had a few supporters who painted Nikki as unstable and violent. The state of Georgia, of course, disagrees. They believe that Matt intentionally killed his wife after she denied him sex. This brings me to the question, was Matt Lively guilty of murder? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that he was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Nikki died under mysterious circumstances, which almost certainly involved homicide. She and Matt were $300,000 in debt and had a long history of intense arguing. Witnesses said that Matt was physically and verbally harmful toward Nikki. He was demanding, controlling, manipulative, aggressive, and petty. At various times, he physically restrained Nikki, locked her in a bathroom, made secret audio recordings of her, and tracked the location of her cell phone. In addition, he frequently reviewed the videos from his 21-camera surveillance system. Matt admitted that on July 8 and July 9, he argued with his wife because she rejected his request to have sex. Nikki's system contained the drug GHB, and she and Matt had sex within a few days prior to her murder. Matt mentioned to his family that he would be blamed if his wife were found drugged and murdered. This reference about being drugged seems oddly specific. It took 2 days for Matt to report his wife missing. He supplied inconsistent timelines regarding the morning of July 9. Matt did not help in the search effort and argued about what photographs and content could be featured in the missing person flyer for his wife. In audio recordings, the couple can be heard arguing. It appeared as though Matt was being manipulative. He was trying to portray himself as the calm one, but he was clearly not respecting the boundary his wife was trying to set. For example, in a few recordings, Nikki clearly did not want to talk about the relationship at that time, yet Matt kept pushing. He was deliberately aggravating her so that she would respond in an angry manner. The video recordings around the time that Nikki disappeared were deleted from the security system, and software was used to ensure the permanence of this deletion. The software was run on the day Nikki was reported missing and again on the day her body was found. Only Matt could have done this. Matt implied that his wife disappeared due to a mental health crisis, but she had no history of mental illness. Moving to the exculpatory factors, Nikki was described as impulsive, erratic, loud, demanding, and angry. In the audio recordings, she used an excessive quantity of expletives. Most of the audio recordings were made in 2008 and 2009, long before Nikki died. During this time, the couple was seeing a mental health clinician who advised them to make the recordings. In 2010, the couple took a trip to Hawaii and renewed their marriage vows. Matt's daughter said that Nikki was the one in the marriage who was violent. Matt was not violent. Right before Nikki went missing, she allegedly removed her shirt in front of Matt's father, who was in the house at the time. Nikki was not wearing a bra. She allegedly said, "Let's blank like a family." There was no sign of a struggle in the house, and Nikki's cause of death could not be determined. When considering all the evidence, do I think that Matt Lilley was guilty of murder? Yes, I believe he was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. I don't think that Matt planned the murder, or he would have turned off the cameras in advance. This murder occurred in the heat of the moment, and Matt found himself trapped by his own security system. What do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. After getting divorced for a second time, Nikki was ready to find a new lover. She was feeling increasingly desperate and lowered her standards significantly by selecting Matt. Nikki was immature, impulsive, prone to anger, and had low frustration tolerance. Matt had these same characteristics, but he was also irresponsible, grandiose, manipulative, vindictive, self-centered, and had a sense of entitlement. Both Matt and Nikki probably would not have been suitable romantic partners for just about anyone. Like, being in any relationship would have been challenging for them. For Nikki, having a lover was really about not being alone. She wanted companionship and protection. It was important for her to have another adult in the house. For Matt, having a lover was about obtaining sex. He rationalized the repeated rejections by Nikki as indicating that Nikki had a problem. In his mind, he wasn't being too demanding. Rather, Nikki was being insensitive, cruel, and unkind. Matt used many tactics to convince Nikki to have sex with him, like guilt trips, trying to convince her that she had a fear of intimacy, and acting as if she was projecting other bad experiences with men onto him. For example, he said that she complained that other men had used her for sex. Matt was extremely pushy and would just keep coercing Nikki. This was evident in the audio recordings when he simply refused to leave her alone. Nikki was growing tired of the constant pressure. She did not want to have sex as much as Matt did. On the night of the murder, Matt was really hoping to obtain sex. The couple was on a date night, and he thought things were going to go his way. When Nikki refused his advance, Matt was not willing to accept her answer. He obtained his ultimate goal by drugging Nikki with GHB. Nikki was furious, therefore Matt murdered her using asphyxiation. Another possibility is that Matt accidentally caused Nikki's death. There is no way to know for certain what happened. Either way, Matt did not premeditate the crime. He quickly disposed of Nikki's body nearby and deleted the video recordings, which were captured on his surveillance cameras. The initial investigation by the police was lazy and overlooked quite a bit of evidence, but eventually a proper investigation was conducted. This led to Matt's conviction. Now moving to my final thoughts. This murder case has focused attention on this trend of married couples recording each other during conversations or arguments. Sometimes this is done on the advice of a psychotherapist, as was the case here. Unfortunately, this tactic rarely leads to any type of improvement, largely because psychotherapists don't usually make any meaningful interpretation of the recordings. What is the point of making the recordings in the first place if they are never going to be used for anything constructive? Research has been conducted on the content of audio recordings between husband and wife couples. In the cases that involved the husband eventually becoming physically violent, one important pattern was identified. Namely, the level of verbal aggression exhibited by the wife was as high as the verbal aggression exhibited by the husband. This doesn't mean that the wife's behavior caused the physical violence. Rather, the pattern is simply something that clinicians should be on the lookout for. It's a bad sign for the health of the relationship. There's this idea that when a husband is violent toward a wife, the wife is always submissive beforehand, but that is not always the case. Sometimes both people are verbally aggressive, and then physical aggression occurs later. With the case of Matt and Nikki, there is this idea that Matt completely controlled everything that Nikki did, and she never fought back. I do not believe that is what happened in this case. I think that Nikki resisted Matt's attempts to control her the entire time. The difference in this case came down to physical capabilities. Matt could not get what he wanted using verbal tactics, so he resorted to a physical method.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars longa, vita brevis.
"24 hours ago, I found out the person that I'd been dating and seeing for the last 6 months as a con man."
That is my sister Emma. Andrew Tonks' lies had been so convincing, she'd invested $300,000 with him. However, the tables were about to turn on Andrew. What he didn't know was that Emma had discovered his real identity. But to get any chance of justice, Emma had to act like it was business as usual. Coming up in this series...
"And that's when murder, all this stuff goes through my mind. I'm really, really scared."
"I'm assuming Sarah has watched too much Netflix and figures I've been defrauding you. Couldn't be further from the truth."
"That's what this was, a real life story that seems so unbelievable, but it was actually true."
A true story that all starts with one simple swipe to the right. I'm Sarah Ferris.
And I'm Emma Ferris. And this is my story, Conning the Con.